You know that feeling when you just take off the uniform and all the stuff that you leaned on is gone? The paycheck, the housing, the crew that always had your back. You know, one day you're in, the next day it's like you're just on an island all by yourself. Robert Wheeler went through all that. He left the Navy, thought he had all the things lined up, and then the bottom fell out from under him. He blew up to over 300 pounds, he battled depression, and felt like he didn't even want to be claim to be a veteran anymore. And what turned it around for him was a pretty simple, but not always the easiest thing to do. He focused on his fitness, his mindset, and discipline. In this episode, he's going to talk about why he tells himself to shut up when the spiral starts in his head. How Chapter 31, vocational rehab and employment benefits from the VA gave him the time and freedom to reset, and how pain can actually be the thing that pushes you forward. Before we get into this episode, though, I want to take a moment to raise awareness for something that I think is deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the global war on terrorism. This memorial will serve as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure that their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. So if you want to learn more or find out how you can support their mission, visit GWATMemorialFoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Robert, welcome to the show. Really glad to have you here.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we get into kind of your whole story and everything, give us a little rundown of your background, kind of your military service and kind of what led you to where you are today.
That's a loaded question.
It might be, yeah.
That might take like 3 to 5 episodes over a course of a couple months.
A couple drinks. And
born and raised in California for 21 years. Kind of was the guy that didn't have a goal or a vision or a dream. Just I literally probably thought I was going to live with my parents till the day they died, and I kind of took over their stuff, which really wasn't, I guess, the best attitude. But so after I got kicked out of college for academics and lost my scholarships, my sports scholarships, my dad wasn't too happy with me. So he was a business owner, entrepreneur, and every day, literally every day for 6 months before he went to work at 5 a.m., he would kick open my door. I think literally my door was destroyed by the end of the day. And he'd be like, join the Navy. Well, me thinking that, ha-ha, Dad, I'm going to join the Navy and I'm going to piss you off and you're not going to even know. He got what he wanted. I got upset one day after the abuse to my door. And I went down to the recruiter not knowing anything, not having anybody to talk to about getting into the military, and ended up joining the Navy, where I would do a 10-year career. From there, become a police officer in the federal and local system for about 17 years total, including my military service. Would leave that to open a strength and conditioning gym, which I ran for 4 years, would lose that due to COVID, and then would eventually pivot into what I'm doing now and who I am today.
Excellent. So, you know, the military was not something that was on your radar from a young age. That was kind of more of a, stick it to dad kind of thing. But turned out that's what he wanted anyways, and it kind of worked out in his eyes probably. So after leaving the Navy, after you got out and you kind of transitioned into local and federal law enforcement, what was the hardest part about that transition out of the Navy? Kind of was it part of rebuilding that sense of identity or purpose, or what was it for you that was the most difficult in that transition period?
So I love talking about this because I'm finding out even from other veterans I speak to today, transitioning really hasn't changed, and that's pretty scary based on how most of us transition. So if you have any civilian listeners, when we transition, when we get out, we lose everything overnight. We lose our community. Depending on, injuries or whatever, we lose our medical benefits, we lose everything, base housing, if you have base housing, we lose everything that we've been dependent on, that I was dependent on for 10 full years. And it was just a huge culture shock. I remember sitting in TAPS class, and it was just death by PowerPoint. I wasn't paying attention. I was more focused on, I just want to get out of the military. I'm done with this stuff. I had some issues in my career and just like wanted to be done. And VA benefits wasn't explained to me. Pension, like nothing was explained to me. It was just, oh, you can either take a pension or you can take your VA benefits. And me being like, well, I need money now, I took my pension. You know, I was a E5, so a second class. They gave me basically a $50,000 paycheck, as that's what I would make a year. And I get out, and then, you know, I'm married, I have kids, I have a house, I have responsibilities, and my money's like just dwindling. And I don't have a job, like I don't know what I'm doing. They really need to be a better side of things about maybe putting, and I say this just like school too, like instead of learning about history and stuff, which some history is important, you know, don't get me wrong, but teach kids how to balance their money, how to manage money, how to find a job, how to talk to people, how to social, like things that matter. The same thing in the military. They need to be like, well, we're going to check on you for a period of 6 months. Once a month, you're going to have this counselor, or this person is going to make sure you're physically, mentally, and emotionally well, and that you have all the resources you need to succeed when you're out, because we don't get that getting out. So it's a very frustrating thing. So I probably had the experience that I would say 90% of all vets have. So,
right. You're right. And I think to your point, the military does a great job at training us to, you know, put the uniform on, become a soldier, a sailor, a Marine, airman, what, you know, what have you. They train us to do that job, but they kind of fall short when it comes to taking that uniform off and becoming a civilian. And it's so strange, if you think about it, that we all were civilians at one point, right? And so, like, we know what it's like to be a civilian, but what we don't realize is that a lot of times, for the majority of people, I would imagine, in the military, they were a civilian as a teenager, as a high school kid, who didn't really have a ton of responsibilities. They didn't have a family. They didn't have a house or mortgage or, you know, car payments and all those types of things that go along with it. They were just, you know, a high school kid. Maybe they had a part-time job or something like that at a, you know, and it's not the same level of responsibility that you're talking about as now, you know, someone in their 30s or 40s or even beyond, who now has a family and responsibilities and all these other things that you have to take care of. And when all of those things that you relied on, your paycheck, your even food allowances and housing allowances and all the things that go along with it, all those things are just taken away from you. Now it's like, oh crap, I got to figure this out on my own. And that's right. Kind of it's almost like being tossed in the deep end of a pool and not really knowing how to swim, right?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, even scarier than that is just the community. You know, even when I left federal law enforcement, once I was out of there, nobody called me. No one said, hey, are you okay? Like that club, it was over. Like my time was done. And it's the same with the military. Like your coworkers, you might be friends on Facebook or Instagram or whatever and say hi here and there, but essentially they just forget about you because you're not part of their club anymore. And it's, man, like, what do I do? I'm by myself.
Right. And it's like, it's just flipping a switch and you go from one day you're in the club, next day you're out of a club. And yeah, you might have some friends that you keep from your time in and, you know, just like any other phase of life, you know, you might have friends from high school still as you know, an adult, you might have friends from college or other places that you might've picked up friends, but you know, the majority of those people who were friends at that point in time in your life, oftentimes they kind of go off and do their own thing. And, you know, it's the few and far between that end up sticking around for the long haul. And so that's been, you know, my experience anyways, but, you know, so part of military service, you know, you build structure, self-discipline, things like that. And when you're transitioning out, I got to believe that is an asset that we have as we're getting out. What was your experience with that? Was that helpful for you?
It's helpful for me now. I have PTSD, I have major depressive disorder, I have anxiety, and essentially, I didn't know I had those things. It took a while through filing VA claims and seeing counselors and getting divorced after 18 years from my first marriage to realize, like, oh, crap, there's something wrong with me. So I had the structure, like, and that's the thing I guess I'm trying to fight for besides just men, but mainly veterans and first responders. we're warriors, we're fighters. Even like if you were a cook in the military or an admin person, you still had to do training. You still had to be in some sort of shape. You still had to be kind of dangerous. And we get out and, you know, we lose that community and we lose that purpose. And I mainly say purpose, and especially for a man, purpose is huge. And when we lose that purpose, we just kind of like, I guess, forget about our training, so to speak. I mean, I had blown up to just over 300 pounds due to depression and not being in the military anymore, because I thought I was going to do 20 years. I was ready to retire. And that opportunity due to injury was taken away from me. And I was very bitter, upset, and mad about that for a long time. So now, yes, my military training is very essential to everything that I currently do, especially in the discipline. But from getting out the first point, no, I lost. Like, I think a lot of times, whether you want to or not, we get in that civilian mode and we just kind of say, okay, I'm a civilian now. And we just like throw away everything. I remember throwing away my uniforms, you know, and now I'm like, damn, I wish I at least kept like one to have as a memento. But no, I was the guy like, well, F this, I'm done. You know, they freaking screwed me over, that bitter angriness, and just kind of remove that aspect from my life. So for the longest time, I wouldn't even... Now, I'm not the guy, I don't wear campaign hats, and I typically don't wear like branch specific shirts, but I wouldn't even tell people I was a veteran. I was embarrassed. It took a long time for me to lean into everything that the military actually gave me.
Yeah. And, you know, that's not an uncommon reaction. I've heard that from other people as well, that they have something similar to that, where they're like, you know what, I don't even identify as a veteran. It's just, you know, yeah, I served, but you know, so what? Like that's just a part of me. It's like, yeah, maybe I used to work at a grocery store, but like, that's not who I am. I'm not, you know, that person who worked at that grocery store. But you know, it's not even something you bring up in a conversation unless, you know, someone specifically asks about it. But
right.
It's just a thing that you did. And that's kind of where they want to just leave it. But I guess to your point, there's a lot that the military has given us as far as not just like the discipline and structure that you kind of can build around your life, which I think are valuable assets to have, but there's also a wide range of benefits that are available to us that can help out, especially someone like yourself. You mentioned you had PTSD, depression, anxiety, all those things. You know, there's mental health resources, there's benefits that can be offered, you know, as far as like disability benefits, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, I'm sure some of the listeners can probably attest to this, is that, you know, having some of these issues affects your day-to-day life, and it maybe affects your ability to earn an income. And so having some of those benefits coming in doesn't completely replace your income, you know, and it's not designed to do that, but it can help, you know, ease the burden just a little bit, so that it's just, you know, one less thing that you now have to worry about, and just make life a little bit easier, so that you can focus on getting better and trying to make those strides towards improvement, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so I am 100% disabled vet, and it took me a very long time to understand the difference between what I guess I earned versus what I felt I should deserve. You know, I think a lot of times, when it comes to VA disability, it's a very fine line between, do you deserve, you know, what you're going to get out of it, versus the people that just say, oh, well, I know it's free money, so I'm going to claim something.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to get over that hump and listen to different people, but like, no, like, you served your country for 10 years, you were put through hell, like, these are your benefits, like, these are for you. So having that, and I'm actually currently a full-time student, I'm in a program called Vocational Rehab. So for the civilian and even veterans that maybe don't know, that's called Chapter 31. And what that is for me, because of my mental health, because of my injuries, I can't necessarily be a police officer anymore. Not that I want to get back in that position at my age. So you go into your voc rehab counselor, or you fill out your form at va.gov, and you're like, hey, I can't do this job anymore. I need something. I don't want to just be on disability. And they actually allow you to go to school. Now, there's some hoops you have to jump through, and the program obviously isn't perfect, but it does provide me a stipend based on how many hours I'm in school. And so between the stipend and my disability, that allows me essentially to do what I'm doing now, be a host, you know, on a podcast, run a coaching business. Everything that I want to do, I now have that time freedom, because I'm also learning, you know, I'm getting my degree in communications. So I'm getting a degree and I'm getting my disability, and that equals time freedom. So, you know, I don't think everybody necessarily wants to be disabled, so to speak, or go to school. But if you have other options or other things you want to do, start a business, maybe a career change, have more time with your kids, you're right. The military has tons of benefits and options for you to do that, where you can still make a wage. Now, you know, obviously if I didn't have the business, like, I'm not rich, I'm not, you know, driving around in a Ferrari or a Lamborghini right now in my 5-story, you know, house in Miami in the rich district. But no, I'm living pretty decently off of what the military is affording me to have from my benefits.
Right. And I think an important thing that a lot of people overlook when talking about benefits like this is sometimes they feel like they feel like they're taking away from somebody else who might deserve those benefits, you know, quote unquote, more than me, you know, someone who's more injured than me or something like that. Then it becomes a pissing contest and you know, who wants to get into all that, right?
Right.
But the thing that I think a lot of people fail to recognize is that if, let's say you didn't get any of the benefits that were afforded to you as a veteran, and you were struggling to make ends meet and you were really having a tough time, you're you know, life's falling apart, your finances are a mess, you're just, you know, one bill away from being homeless, and you know, you're in that kind of situation. Imagine you have a neighbor who's, you know, a 17, 18 year old kid who's considering joining the military, and he sees this neighbor who's a veteran whose life is falling apart, and he's like, my gosh, this guy went through hell in the military, he's, you know, injured, he's got all these issues, and the military didn't do anything to help him. Why would I want to sign up to join a service that is going to, like, basically throw me out like trash? You know, even though that's not the case, like, the military will take care of you, the VA and stuff, they will take care of you. It's just you're not taking up the offer that's being put out there for you. And if you don't take them up on that, that's kind of on you. It's your fault that you didn't do that. But then other people will start to see you and be like, well, shit, I don't want to join a service that's going to basically throw me out like a piece of garbage, you know, use me and toss me out when I'm all used up. So, you know, it kind of hurts that next generation of potential good soldiers or sailors, Marines, airmen, you know, what have you, that, you know, it ruins those people who might otherwise join and you know, make a good career out of the military. And so you kind of have to look at it that way too. It's like, you know what? Take the benefits. You earned them. And there's no shame in taking those types of benefits, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. If you served, you know, some people just do a 3-year contract. Some people, you know, do 10 years. Some people do 15 years. Some people retire. Like, it doesn't matter if something happened in your military career, sexual trauma, abuse, you got injured, yeah, you were in war. Regardless of, you don't have to, you know, God forbid, lose a limb or get shot, or it's not just combat related. There's, you know, so much things that go on in the military that I guess civilians and the outside world doesn't know about, that if it makes you feel any kind of way, it's your duty, like you said, it's your right to be able to apply for these benefits. Now, does it mean you're automatically going to get them? No. And sometimes you're going to have to fight like hell to get them. And is VA medical perfect? Hell no, but it's definitely better than having no medical at all.
Sure.
And the benefits there are better than having no benefits at all. So take advantage of whatever you can when you can.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that was very well stated. And you're right, you know, that it's not perfect, but I don't, quite frankly, my wife goes to, you know, regular civilian doctors, like, she's not a veteran, and they're not perfect either. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, issues going on in the entire medical community. So I don't think it's just the VA that has issues, right? So as far as, you know, your mental health side of things, you know, you've obviously talked about that just a little bit there. As far as your physical health, you know, like fitness and things like that, has that helped you at all? Because you said, you know, you kind of ballooned up to, you know, much heavier weight, and then, you know, obviously you did a little bit of work to get yourself back to, you know, a better physical condition. Did that seem to help your mental state at all?
Definitely. I mean, you know, as a personal development coach and former gym owner and someone that grew up playing sports, played college sports, you know, had to be in shape in the military, always had that view of, if you're a police officer, you need to be in good shape just so you can, you know, survive depending the given situation. I always say, you know, fitness kind of saved my life, because at that 300 pounds, I could have continued to go down that path of just keep eating, keep, you know, not paying attention to nutrition and ingredients and the kind of workouts I was doing, because I was always kind of like a big guy muscular, but I was the kind of guy that was just like, oh, I'm just going to eat as many calories as I can. It doesn't matter. I'm going to the gym. And it took a lot of education and a lot of ego, losing the ego, to get where I'm at today. But in my coaching, it goes fitness, mindset, discipline. So fitness is the cornerstone of my life. I tell people all the time that the gym, going to the gym or doing some form of activity, it's so much more than just looking good. The mental benefits that it provides, the clarity that it provides. Some of my best ideas come to me when I'm in the gym by myself, headphones on, just focused on that workout, because nobody's bothering me. I'm by myself in that moment in time, and I'm just doing the work and thinking about, okay, well, who do I want to be my next podcast guest, or who do I want to freaking write my journal for, or put my coaching out to? And, you know, it just gives me clarity. Like, fitness is, I think, is the fountain of youth. I think, you know, I have an old way. I tell people all the time, I kind of have this old way of thinking of what a man should be, as far as the whole hard to kill, you know, aspect of being in some kind of shape, having some sort of discipline, know how to either hunt or use a gun or cook or, you know, different things to, you know, make men strong and men be men and get rid of this, you know, masculinity BS, because men are meant to protect, provide, and preside over their family. And that's what I'm trying to build in my communities.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the culture has kind of shifted away from that, where it's kind of more like the softer, weaker side of things is seen as what people are desiring maybe in themselves or whatever. But ultimately you're going to start to feel like you're missing something on the inside, right? Like, because that's your purpose is, like what you said, it's there to provide and protect and all that. And if you're not capable of doing those things, then, I mean, it's one thing to just choose not to do those things for whatever reason. I don't want to start a family. I don't, you know, whatever. Okay. That's on you. That's your choice. But if you don't even have the ability to protect or provide for people, that's got to wear you down on the inside, I would think, right?
Well, one of the craziest things I think I ever saw, and I don't remember where I've seen it because I saw it a long time ago, this guy was talking, they're interviewing him. He was like, he was a career criminal. He would abduct children, right, of all things. One of the worst of the worst people. And he said, plain as day, if someone looks like they're out of shape, if they look like they're soft, then they're my target. He wasn't going after fathers that were jacked or had some kind of muscle mass on them or looked, you know, dangerous. He was going after the parents that weren't paying attention and was like, okay, I got you and I can get your kid. And that's a very scary realization, especially, you know, if you're a father. I have three kids, and I always pride myself on, even when they were younger, two of my kids are adults now, being able to protect them by all means necessary if I had to. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a father's love right there. It's not. And when I talk about like old school way of thinking and masculinity, I also talk about kind of a hybrid model where I consider myself a pretty manly dude. Most people walk away from me on the street. I'm actually a pretty nice guy. I'm a big teddy bear, a softy once you get to know me. But I just have that look, I guess, of leave me alone. I always get asked if I'm a professional fighter or something, or an athlete, or, you know, I go to Home Depot and the guy's like, damn, you're huge. And, you know, I like that. Like, yeah, I want to be intimidating, even though I'm not an intimidating guy.
Right.
But it just, I don't know. Like, I just, at the same time, I can be vulnerable. Like, I can cry if I have to. I can cry in front of my wife if I see something on TV that makes me sad. And I think people are too caught up on the, it's either you are vulnerable, emotional, or you're tough and you're quiet. And a silent man, a man that acts like nothing's bothering him, that's a dangerous thing, because that man is going through issues. That man needs some sort of help. That man is lost.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to build the break the stigma of vulnerability and letting people know that, look, like, you can be a man's man and you can still have emotions and you can still dance with your daughter if you want to, and you can act silly and goofy. It doesn't make you weak. It doesn't make you less of a man.
Right. And I think the point of all of that is your ability to be intimidating is there, right? It doesn't mean that you have to be intimidating all the right. time, that you right. have to be a jackass to people, and you have no. to, you know, you don't need to do any of that, but you could if the situation warrants, right? I know I have, my wife and I joke around that like she'll go someplace, you know, she'll go get the mail, you know, walk to the end of the street, get the mail, and it takes her 45 minutes because she's stopping and talking to all the neighbors and all that stuff. And for me, I'm back in like 2 minutes because nobody wants to talk to me because I guess I just have that look on my face that like, nobody wants to talk. And here I am hosting a podcast, so it's kind of like a captive audience.
Same. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like I'm a very, very proper, like even this morning, I needed something out of a case in Walmart and I'm asking the guy, good morning, how are you doing? Could you please get this for me? I'm not sure. Like, get in the case and give me this. Now, like, no, I'm very nice and sure. cordial and hold doors open for people and help people when I can. And that's that whole totality of being a man.
Right, exactly. And I think there's a lot of things that go into that, and it's complex and there's a lot of kind of moving pieces. But I think, you know, a piece of it is got to be also discipline too, that goes into it. And, you know, I know I tried to be as disciplined as I can be, and, you know, we're all human, we're all going to make mistakes, but I try to be as disciplined as I can and be consistent with it. And I find that for me, when I'm having a day where the motivation is just not there, if I'm disciplined and this is my routine, I wake up at this time and I go to the gym and I exercise and I do this type of thing, I'm going to do it whether I'm motivated to do it or not, just because it's part of my routine. And it's just going to be that thing that I do. And it's a lot harder for me to just stay in bed and snooze the alarm and keep sleeping when it's that thing that I just do every single day, right? And I got to imagine discipline plays a role in all of that, right?
I mean, definitely, you know, second pillar of my coaching. And I want to tell like the public this, if you have mental health issues, I know it's not easy. Like if you don't mm-hmm. have mental health issues, it's not easy. But if you have mental health issues, it's not easy. There's some days where I just have a really bad day. I have a really bad, low, depressed day, and I may not get necessarily everything done, but with the discipline, I have more good days than bad. And that's the key, is to be that 1% better every day. If it wasn't for discipline, I wouldn't be on this show with you right now. I wouldn't be hosting my own podcast, because being, you know, disabled vet student, I could just focus on that and be home playing video games right now, or sure. watching TV, or just wasting my time. But as a man that wants to help as many people as possible, as a man that wants to leave something to my kids and leave my mark on the world, so to speak, discipline is literally the only thing that keeps me. I'm never motivated to do anything. I mean, I'm 47 years old. I'm tired all the time. You know, it's always something. My wife's a teacher. She comes home. She wants to vent about how, you know, Johnny called her a bad name or something. And then you have, you know, responsibilities you have to take care of. Motivation is never a word in my repertoire, so to speak. So.
Sure. Yeah. No, and I hear where you're coming from. We're not too far off age-wise, and I kind of feel the same way. It's like I'm not always motivated to do things, but when I have that discipline kind of built in, I mean, even this podcast, I started this podcast a little over 6 years ago now, and I've been consistent every single week putting out at least one episode, and I eventually switched to two episodes a week, and it's been consistent, and I haven't missed that. Because I built in that discipline that it's like, this is what I'm going to do. And I feel like if I ever missed a week and I just didn't put something out, that would probably just be the end of it. And I just wouldn't do any more because it would all just fall apart. And so that kind of keeps me going and keeps the discipline there, because I don't want it to end. I want to keep doing it because I want to help our fellow veterans and their families and everything like that, because, you know, quite frankly, we lose too many of them, and that's why this show exists, is so that we can help where we can, you know, give the right resources and the right, you know, tips and strategies and mindset and all that kind of stuff that we might need. And, you know, I know we go through a lot of pain, especially the, like you mentioned before, people who go through you know, mental health issues. You know, life's tough as it is, and then you have that added on top of it, that just makes things so much harder. But sometimes you can take that pain and you can kind of transform it into something better, something to kind of propel you forward. You were saying, you know, if you get 1% better every day, that 1% better doesn't come with a little bit of sacrifice. And so, you know, I gotta imagine some pain is okay, and we can work through that, but learning how to manage that and do the right things and not let that take control of everything is important too, right?
We have to use, so my whole shtick or mantra, everything I do is based on the principle of turning pain into progress.
Okay.
And when I say pain into progress, I don't mean necessarily physical pain or even emotional pain. It's just more discomfort than anything. We found that if you're comfortable, right? If you're just comfortable all the time, and if you want to live that way and kind of, I guess, you know, I'm going to show my age in that matrix, stuck in the matrix all the time, just kind of going day by day and you're happy, hey, that's what works for you. But for other people that realize, crap, I'm going to die someday and I need to do as much as possible and live as the best possible way that I can for me, you have to embrace the darkness. I was a very dark, negative person for a very, very, very long time. Everything was bad. Every day was bad. My current wife now used to say like that pretty much I was Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. I was just getting up. The rain cloud was already over my head. And I started to learn. I'm like, every time I said I was going to have a bad day, guess what? I had a bad day.
Yeah.
Every time I said I was going to have a good day, I didn't always have a good day, but I didn't necessarily have a bad day either. And it was just that change in thought, that reframing things. You know, I always tell people, even when I coach them, and it's like they don't believe me, the simplest things in life always tend to work. So, you know, for me, initially practice, and I still practice gratitude, but gratitude was huge for me. I was the guy, how come I don't have this house? How come I don't have that car? How come I don't have the 20,000 followers on Instagram? How come no one's given me the light, the thing that everybody kind of falls in this trap nowadays? And then I was like, well, crap, I have a pretty nice house. I live in a gated community in Florida. I have a newer vehicle that I can drive that has a warranty if anything happens to it. I have, you know, pets in my life, kids in my life that they all love me and want to spend time with me. My wife is so freaking amazing. And just meditating on that every night before I go to bed, whether that's prayer or just meditating on that, that right there was just such a huge, huge game changer for me. And then the positive affirmations, when I start going down that downward path, like even today, and I say some funny things. So I'm in the gym today and I'm saying over and over again, I'm going to be as big as Joe Rogan. I'm going to make $1 million. I'm going to help as many people as possible. And I'm just saying that as I'm doing bicep curls in the gym to myself. And there's just something beautiful and special about when you put that out into the universe. Like I had a neuroscientist on my show and I literally asked him, I'm like, look, if I put all this negative shit out there, is my brain going to think that everything's negative? And he's like, yes. And I said, okay, so if I put everything out there that's positive and think everything's positive, is my brain going to think it's positive? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, then why am I angry and upset and mad all the time? Why am I so negative all the time? And so like that shift right there, that was huge, man. That was just like everything for me. So
yeah, because if everything is negative and depressing and sad and just awful, and you're giving that energy off, it's kind of hard for you to think of anything else. It's hard for you to think of something positive. And as you were talking, you're saying how, you know, gratitude was a big thing for you and that, you know, you have people who love you and there are good things in your life. And you started mentioning some of those. And I started putting myself in the shoes of one of the listeners, just, you know, a generic listener. I don't know who's actually listening to this episode right now, but I can imagine someone sitting there. It's like, yeah, I got that too, but... And then they were going to continue, but and kind of turn it around into something negative. And I think the key there is to kind of stop it at that but. If you're having that kind of thought and just like, you know what, just shut up, stop at but, and don't even get to the but.
Definitely.
Don't, you know, just hey, you got someone who loves you. Leave it at that. And you don't need to keep going down that negative spiral of all that other crap. That you might have these thoughts in your head. And I struggle with this too. You know, these are the way my mind works is I live in the after the butt, you know, world, and that's like not the place to be. But I've started to learn that by just stopping it there and just tell yourself, shut up, or whatever you got to tell yourself, just stop it right at that point and just live there and just sit with the good stuff for a little bit. And then it starts to become a little bit easier and a little bit easier to accept that there are good things in your life. And I think everyone can probably point to some good things in their life. And some people have more than others, and that's understandable. And we're not all the same, but you can always point to something that's good, and you could find something to kind of hold on to that keeps you in the good side, on the earlier side of the butt, if you will, So it's hard to do, but definitely, with practice, you can start to help yourself stop living in the wrong side of that butt, if you will. And so I think that's one tool for me anyways that I've used is just in my head, I just tell myself, shut up. It's like, stop with this nonsense, because it's not helpful. And, quite frankly, a lot of times it's not even true. There might be a little sliver of truth, but it's like really more me just being negative. And that's not where you want to live. And so, I just tell myself, hey, knock it off. Take the compliment, take the win, and move on from there, right? Are there any other tools or strategies or things like that you've found helpful, or even with some of the folks that you work with that have been helpful for dealing with things like anxiety or trauma or depression, burnout, all those kind of things?
Yeah, definitely. So, first of all, stay tuned, guys, for our co-written book called Tell Yourself to Shut Up, The Ultimate Guide to Talking to Yourself in a Positive Manner. No, I mean, there's a lot of things out there. I think I really like that, tell yourself to shut up, because I find myself having to do that a lot of times. There's a lot of times where, like, I don't know why, and I don't know if it's because of the negativity or my upbringing or my parents. I'm just a born complainer. Like, mm-hmm. I tend to complain about everything, and I have to tell myself a lot of times, like, dude, shut up. Like, what are you complaining about? Like, why are you getting so upset or right over that? And that goes into one of the things that I love to teach, especially to veterans and first responder communities, and that's that emotional regulation. That emotional regulation and reframing how we say things and see things, those two things right there are huge in the personal development mindset space, because I'm the kind of guy, for example, that if somebody would cut me off, I would get mad. I would probably honk at them. I would get on their ass. I would flip them off. Little bit of road rage, nothing where I'm going to try to kill anybody, obviously, but stuff that still isn't very healthy, isn't very good. Same thing where if someone messed up my order, I would probably, like, I tell people all the time, like, what I would call them is adult temper tantrums. I would throw these adult temper tantrums where Coach Rob isn't getting his way and he's upset and he's angry, but he's not angry at the external factor. He's angry on the internal factor. So that's that emotional regulation where we have to learn that you have to, take that step, like you said, tell yourself to shut up or just stop. So taking a pause or a break or some sort of deep breath and realizing, like, okay, this dude's in a rush. That's on him. I'm okay. Nothing. I didn't get in an accident. I'm not losing any time getting to where I need to go. Like, chill out. Yeah. And then usually if you can pick up on that trigger, like, and it's practice, obviously, but if you can pick up on that trigger that right before you're about to get upset, maybe you start to feel your muscles tense up, or you start to feel like an overwhelmed heat in your body, or you're getting ready to throw that bird or that cuss word. If you can catch that and just briefly pause, take a couple deep breaths, and then you can get back to what you were doing. And I learned, unfortunately, too late, because I wish I had this a lot sooner. You only have so much energy in a day, just like you only have so much time in a day. And I tell people this all the time. Are you going to spend this energy cutting people off, yelling, screaming, being nasty, getting to work, and maybe that boss gives you that email you don't like, and you're smacking your computer, and you're just like, F my life, everything sucks? Or you're going to put that energy into getting a promotion, getting in shape, being a better husband, a better mother, a better parent? You have to essentially take that energy and harness it for good and try to block out all that bad stuff, so you can be positive. So emotional regulation, and then the reframing is just statements like, if I say, man, I don't know if I can do this, to I can do this. I won't do this, to I'm going to do this. Making those positive statements and then taking action on that so you can move forward with your life.
Yeah, I think that's all great advice. And just being able, in my case, sometimes just being able to distract yourself enough from that situation to be able to focus on the good things, and or at least not focus on those negative things is helpful as well. There was someone a while ago who said this to me. I apologize because I forget who it was who said this, and this may be a commonly known thing anyways, but say hypothetically someone gave you, and I'm going to give you a very specific number, and it's going to sound weird, but stick with me till the end and it'll make sense. Let's say someone gave you $86,400 right now today, and someone came around and stole 10 bucks from that stack of money. Would you throw away the rest of the $86,390 to go chase after that 10 bucks?
Of course not.
Of course not, right? That would be ridiculous. You'd be like, right. Okay, well, you know, it's 10 bucks, not the end of the world, right? I still got a ton more money left, right? But think about it this way. There's 86,400 seconds in a day. If someone cuts you off in traffic in, you know, 10 seconds or so, you know, just screws up those 10 seconds of your life, are you going to really throw away the rest of the day because that one jackass decided to screw up 10 seconds of it?
I used to all the time.
Right. Yeah. And so it's, I think going along the lines of what you're saying is that, like, you don't want to throw away all the good, right? I mean, you still got, you know, $86,390, that's still a good chunk of change. And just keep this in mind. You get that same dollar amount the next day, and the day after that, and the day after that. And God, wouldn't that be nice? But
compounding interest, right?
Yeah, right? but you only have, you know, that amount is finite, and you only have so many seconds in a day to enjoy and to do something positive and good with. And if you're going to throw those seconds away because you decide to get pissed off and angry and you know, start flipping the bird or cussing at someone or whatever, it's like, okay, well, you could, that's just taking away from your own enjoyment of life, and you could be doing something better with that. And, you know, I'm guilty of this too. And I don't always do the best at this. And I need to, you know, work on that as well. But it's a good way to kind of frame it, because you don't want to just throw away the good time that you have left. You know, yeah, sure, someone might have screwed up 10 seconds of your life. All right, well, oh well, not a big deal. Move on and enjoy what you have left, right?
Now, I'll give you like a quick story. So I live probably 15, 20 minutes max from my gym. And so going to my gym is literally just a straight route. You can take one street all the way up, you make a left, and then pretty much you're at the gym. Well, they've been doing massive, massive, massive amounts of construction on this street for, it seems like forever now. I wonder if they're ever going to get it done. And I found myself every time driving to the gym and every time going home, and, you know, I'm the kind of guy like, okay, I do a lot of time blocking, so I'm going to work out from 6 to 7 and then from 7 to 8 first meal, because that's the structure that works for me. And I found myself like just getting so angry because obviously traffic's down to one lane on both sides of the street. Now you're incorporating school. School's back in session, so school traffic. And I'm just like, now this 15-minute drive to the gym takes me 30 minutes, right? And I'm just like, man, like, I'm complaining. I'm like, this sucks. Like, and I'm so locked in on always going straight, always going straight, always going straight. And I say this because at one point I'm like, I'm just going to go around the traffic. Will it take me 30 minutes? No. Will it take me maybe an extra 2 minutes, 3 minutes? Yes. But going around that traffic, finding that other direction instead of being in the middle of being pissed off, eased my mind so much. And all it is I just make a right before the construction. I go up a street, I make a left, and I'm through the construction and I'm back on my way. And so sometimes, you know, you have to go out of your way. You have to find, it's not always going to be a straight line. Sometimes you have to go around. Sometimes you have to go under. Sometimes you have to go over. sometimes there's just a different path. You just got to get out of that insanity loop of always being stuck, of going straight down the middle, straight down the middle, straight down the middle.
Yeah, and getting out of your own way is important because, like in your case, it was really you who was preventing you from getting to your destination sooner. It wasn't the construction because there was another option. You just weren't taking it.
And could have got up earlier too.
You could have, right. Yeah, there's a lot of options there that you could have done to control that and give yourself more time, you know, realizing that, okay, yeah, it's going to take me an extra bit of time to drive to and from, you know, the gym. All right, well, then I just either get up earlier or find a different way and or you know, there's probably some other options that are out there too. But don't just get stubborn and just keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, because it's not going to happen, right?
I used to do it all the time. And
eventually the construction is going to go away and you can go back to your old route if you want. And that's great. But, you know, in the meantime, that's not the case. So you got to do something different or just deal with the fact that it's not going to be exactly ideal. And,
right.
You know, that's going to be, those are your choices. You either do something different or deal with it. And don't do something different, I guess, right? You know, so I guess, you know, for someone who's maybe just starting to kind of focus on resilience and improving themselves, bettering themselves, if you had one thing that you could say to them to kind of help them along their way, what would that piece of advice be?
Take care of your I say health and fitness, but I don't mean health and fitness. I mean health, fitness, and nutrition. It's a complete package. Start there, you know, look at what you're doing activity-wise. Now, and I tell people this all the time, like, I'm a big gym guy. I like lifting heavy weights. I believe in strength and conditioning, like, is my church. That's the number one discipline for me as far as working out and longevity. But find something that you love, okay? That's the ultimate goal. Like, if you love walking, walk every day. If you love swimming, swim. If you love bike riding, when I say health, fitness, and nutrition, it doesn't have to be in the gym. Now, right. Coach Rob would prefer you to be in the gym, but it doesn't have to be. Like, the key to, I guess, bettering ourselves, whether you're a man, woman, veteran, no matter what your age is, you have to be happy with yourself, how you look, how you feel. And the only way to do that is change the things that suck, your eating habits, your inactivity, your doom scrolling on social media, not ever being outside or not socializing with people. You have to change those internal factors first before you can start working on everything else.
Sure. Absolutely. I know you mentioned a few times your coaching business. Tell us a little bit about the business, what you do, and the types of folks that you work with.
So I specialize in helping men 30 over get unstuck. So when I say unstuck, maybe you have some mental health issues, some relationship issues. Maybe you're just, you know, you've been a father, you've been in the same company for 20 years, and you're like, man, I'm going crazy, I want out. I'm the guy that you sit down with, and we start with fitness, then mindset, then discipline. I'll look over at your overall health and fitness, see what you can do to start moving, start looking better, start feeling better. Then the mindset work. I have some curriculum that I created that looks at things that trigger you emotionally, mentally. I have journals that help you log your workouts and practice gratitude and breath work and different things. And then the discipline, because ultimately I want you to be able to do this by yourself. I want to work myself out of the job. I don't want to have one coaching client forever. Like, no, if I'm not helping you do this on your own, then I'm not doing my job. And then on top of that, so my brand is called Battlefitted. You can find it at battlefittedbrand.com. Everywhere on social media at Battlefitted. So it's the coaching, then the Battlefitted gear, the clothing. I think, yeah, I'm wearing one of my older shirts. So the Battlefitted clothing and then the Battle Harder podcast, which that's, I guess, I love podcasting so much because I get to tell these stories of people who went through so much worse hell than I ever did in my life. And then they get to tell their stories and why they decided not to give up. And I think, like us doing this podcast and the stuff we're trying to put out there, I always think back to, you know, storytelling days before TV, before radio, you know, ancient Greece, philosophers, they would just talk to each other. They would socialize. And now we have the technology to literally socialize with anybody around the world. And I'm finding that for those out there, if you feel stuck or struggling, you're more than resilient than you think, believe me, because I have these people that have been beaten, sexually abused. I had a guy that had cancer that ran a freaking Ironman during stage four cancer. Like, the mindset, our mind, we're so resilient. So being able to tell these stories, I love that. That's a huge passion project of mine, because I love when people come and maybe they resonate with the woman who had an emotional eating disorder and they reach out to her and they get the help. And that's what it is mainly. I just have this service mindset. That's why initially I became a police officer. That's why I'm a coach now. I want to help as many people as possible.
And it's awesome. It sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. Yep. You're definitely on the right track anyways. And you know, your message out there that you delivered today, and I'm sure throughout your podcast and your coaching work that you do, is one of positivity. It's one of encouragement. It's hope. And, you know, I think it's something that more people need to hear, and, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Cause I think it's definitely going to be helping some people, you know, obviously now and into the future. So thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing, you know, what you do and you know, all these tips and strategies and everything that we talked about today. It's really been a pleasurable conversation. I'm glad that you were able to come on and share it with us.
Thank you. It was a joy to be here. I love being able to talk about everything and in between, which I think we covered quite a bit today.
So. We did. Yeah, absolutely. So thanks so much.
No worries.